Yeah. Your chair is obnoxiously loud.
Hang on, Yeah. I mean, you want me to grab another chair? I won't move in it. Here, I won't move in it. Dude, these are fat guy problems you don't have. Like, you buy a cheap chair and you blow it out in 6 months. Like, that's how it works. So let me put it on here and then go here. Sorry. All right. Hey.
Hey, I guess that'll work. All right. So do you have a topic? Let's just wing it. I know you want to talk about, huh?
Let's do it. Let's just talk about the shit we've been talking about. And, like, you probably don't want this to go political. I would think the same, right? Like,
I mean, on the last one, we got to the point where we were saying the problem is Biden, guys. Don't know how else to tell you this. Like, the problem is overregulation, right? Like,
yeah.
And I don't want to get political, but we've passed the time to be patient. You know what I mean? Like, we've passed that. You know, like, people have got to start saying what it is.
But I think that a lot has to do with media perception of what's happening compared to what you're seeing. Like, granted, we live in
a... Well, hang on. Before we do this, let me introduce it. Let's make this official.
Okay.
Because I hate it when we start talking about good ideas, and then we have to talk about them again, and I'm just like, I don't want to. So anyway, here's the official introduction. Welcome back to the S3 Magazine podcast. I am Jonathan Woolley, and the dude over there is not Mike Sanders this time. That's Frankie Corndogs. You're looking at him. Frank Scrobot is his actual name. Frankie Corndogs is just a nickname that stuck. But anyway, we're, you know, we had lunch actually a couple of times this week, and we were hanging out, and we were talking about just the glory of shitbox cars and how wonderful they are and how, I don't know, I guess you never outgrow them, even though maybe you'd like to think you do. But anyway, you know, Frankie Corndogs was like, hey, let's do a podcast on it. And I said, hey, okay. And then that's about as far as I got. You start this off. I don't want to.
Yeah, dude, to me, it's like, obviously we're both gentlemen post 40. And we're thinking about and we're thinking about the glory. You think you want to reminisce about the glory days. You want to think about 16, 17, 18 years old, like when life was extravagant and you could jump and you could pivot and you could turn, right? And part of that is your lack of funds and not being able to spend a lot of money. But it's funny that it comes full circle as 42-year-old guys, and we want $2,000 cars to spend five times that much money on it just because we couldn't have it back then. We could have it now, and it strikes up nostalgia. Plus, I feel like it's filling a gap that you've had for so long, which is probably why you look at your stable, your lineup, and it's a lot of vehicles that are attainable for the dude who wants to get something fun, right? And so, and I'm kind of in that same boat. Like, I did the Jeep thing. I walked that path because I wanted to live that life and find out what sticks, you know? And
here, explain it to me, because I'm not bragging here. I'm kind of an anomaly, right? Like,
yeah.
I ended up coming out of college, getting a dream job at a magazine that laid me off 6 weeks later and forced me to be a business owner, which I'm not. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm more of just a dreamer than a businessman. But what it did, I mean, I was in my mid-20s at that point. So what it did was, it was kind of like Peter Pan, man. I never grew up, right? So, like... You know, for good and bad. I mean, there's parts of my life that frustrate me because I never grew up. And I see myself sometimes as immature and inferior amongst people my age because, you know, they deal with adult situations, and I'm basically trapped in, you know, like I'm still doing the same stuff. Now that's also a gift, and I realized that, you know, that I never had to compromise who I was. It was, I took a chance at 26, and it's damn sure hadn't been easy, but we've just stayed at it, you know. And so I have held very, very strong to like my core beliefs, which is I'm gonna do stuff that I enjoy doing, perhaps to a fault. But then we have somebody like you, and that's what I wanted, that's what I was getting at, is like, yeah, set the stage for the other side of that coin, which is the 42-year-old guy that was in this shit when he was 25, sure, but then life starts pulling you slowly and consistently out of it.
Yeah, so like I go back to my early 20s when I started to get a couple bucks, because I didn't grow up a kid of means, you know, we could, that's a story for another time, but when I was able to spend my own money, I mean, I had cool rides. I had an E30 back in the day when you can get one for $1,500. I had a 72 Datsun 510 with an SR20 swap. Like, these are cars that kids these days, like, they go like this. But back then, it was like right in the sweet spot of like a broke college age kid, right? And so what you, like, I fell into the trap, like the trap of the corporate world and buying a house. And it's a trap, but it's not a trap, right? Because it kind of taught me how to be an adult. But I never looked, like, I feel the guy inside was you.
Yeah.
Right? Was still Jonathan Woolley to the core. Like, that was, and we vibed back then. I mean, I used to work at the S3 offices in Buford back in the day, and I did that. I was in between jobs, and you posted on Craigslist or something, and I came in, you're like, when can you start? And we were riding bikes down the hills of like downtown Buford and buying IKEA furniture for you walk in. I remember that morning you walk in, you're like, I need a desk. And I was like, yeah, probably. And you're like, let's go to IKEA. Like, all right, that's good hot dogs. Yeah, let's go. And so we, and, you know, we just did things like that. You know, we had, what was the dude's name? What was the frat guy?
Oh, David Lau.
Pie Kappa Dave is who I used to call him. Like, he just, yeah, anyway, that's a story for another time.
Yeah, but Pie Kappa Dave. For you guys that don't know, like, you know, we were just kind of hiring people that we thought could help us sell ads. And he came in there and he was a smooth talker, not necessarily the kind of car guy that drove an M3 convertible. I don't mean that with any disrespect, but like,
it's dope.
Yeah, I know. But it was like it's hard to explain. Anyway, he ended up essentially living at the S3 office because he was running for
like one night he was there, like went downstairs. What's the bar down there downstairs?
I don't remember.
Dude, it's like the rock bar downtown now.
Oh, well, there's 37 Main. Was it
37 Main? Yeah, he was like staying there, but like didn't asked, like, is it cool if I stay here? I think he went down to the bar, got drunk, and was like, man, I shouldn't drive home, and spray painted the bathroom. It's like, yo, that's cool. Like, I feel like we would spray paint the bathroom, but you need to ask permission. Like, you know?
The cops came looking for him. Like, the cops came and was like, does David Lau work here? And I was like, I don't know. I hadn't seen him in a while. And that's how that situation kind of just fixed itself, man.
A drum kit there and bicycles. Dude, it was, oh, my God. It was, like, the most epic, honestly, probably the best time of my 20s were spent in those four walls. Like, it was, okay, like, well, he's, like, you're like me. You have, like, shiny toy syndrome. You're like, oh, look, a bird. Look, yo, whoa, right? Like, we vibe that in that way. And Mike's like, guys, we got to sell ads. Frank, who are you calling today? You know, and it was like Cody was in the corner doing his thing. You know, like, we were all kind of just all over the place. But yeah, it was rad.
Yeah, we found that bike in the dumpster. And then ended up lugging it back up there, stripping all the brakes off of it and everything. And we just cruise it around. And then it turned into a whole thing where we just started kind of getting bikes.
Yeah, I got a bike. I had a fixed, like, 250 fixed gear bicycle going down hills. Not a great idea. But it was fun, you know? Anyway, we kind of got off caught up the focus there of like what happens in life. That obviously that was a stage of life that we have to touch on, right? Because it was just too rad not to talk about. But you fall in the I call it a trap, but it's not, man. It's having kids, having a family. It's part of life that is invaluable. Like, you know, like there wouldn't trade that for the world. But I realized I was like buying new cars, and I was sitting in AC and driving autos and like doing the thing. And I just had like I call it a midlife crisis, call it what it is. But like, I just decided like, no, this isn't the way this story ends. Like, I just don't think that's, you can spend 40 grand. Like a Civic practically costs 40 grand now, and you could buy that and be, if that's your path, then great. Like if you're into fly fishing and that's where you spend your time and money, great. But it's not for me. Like I want the experience of doing hood rat shit with my friends. Like I want that type of experience to a responsible level with children. Like, you know, like there's a balance there. It's kind of epic. It's kind of awesome. And I think you found it, and I'm starting to find it with you as my spiritual guide almost, right? And yeah. So it's just, I mean, I've worked in the auto industry my entire career. You know, that probably should be said. Like, I've worked in typical fix-em parts, TPMS sensors, things of that nature, right? Stuff that you yell at probably frequently. But, And I tried. I got a job. Like I got what was supposed to be the dream job with my background, and like the corporate world. It's like I realized, you know, it's if I'm going to do something special, I got to make my path. Like, and I at this point I could care less. I still sell regular auto parts for a living. Like that's what I do. But it's too fun. It's too fun not to be a part of. Is where I go.
So like, what is it that makes you want to go back to a shit box? Is it the fact that they're purely fun? Is it the fairly low cost of entry? Is it the fact that new cars miss the mark? Like, what's drawing you?
All of that, probably. I mean, to be honest with you, like, new cars do miss the mark. I mean, there are new cars that are sick. Like, I'll be honest. It's easy to hate on certain things, but new cars are sick. A freaking GR would be rad, but it's probably got power windows. It's probably got this, and it's probably got don't kill me scent. I don't want any of that. Like, I have a daily. It's 2012, and I feel like that's about where it stops for me at this point. Like, it's just that's about as new as I care. It really is. The shitbox idea comes from taking something, you know, that feels like someone's quote unquote trash, like they've given up or ran out of money or they don't have the time to dedicate to it. And I've chosen with life to dedicate the time, effort, and, you know, I want a $2,000 car and I want to throw $10,000 worth of parts at it, like, because that car is going to be awesome. It's going to remind me of being a kid and not being able to build a $12,000 CRX or whatever it is, like total investment. And what can you do for 12 grand?
Here's the thing. Like, we say new cars suck. And that is just a broad, you know, blanket that we throw over the whole thing. Not all new cars suck. You mentioned a GR86. That's a killer car. Despite the recall, you know, drama that's around it, it's still a killer driver's car. The problem is, for me, and I love the car, the value's not there, right? Like, when these things are $35,000 plus interest rates are high, and I'm just throwing a number out there, but depending on your down payment, you're probably going to have $400 to $500 a month car note on a GR86. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for me, somebody that stayed in this their whole lives, you know? And like, it damn sure doesn't make sense to somebody like you that's maybe fallen out of it and wants to come back. Like, that's where I think new car manufacturers are missing this mark. There's a lot of people that are like, man, I miss that feeling, right? I've been driving a grown-up full-size luxury truck for 10 years. I miss that feeling of actually driving, of when it was more than just commuting and I want to get back to it. Yeah, let's see what's out there now. Holy shit, even a Honda Type R is $50,000. Like, it's eliminating people from coming back to those new options. And they made them so good in the 90s, man, just for example, that it's hard not to go back to that. And it's what you were saying, I'm trying to kind of, all the little thoughts that were going in my head when you were talking, I'm trying to go back and hit on. I don't want to pay $35,000 for a GR86 that's got $10,000 worth of shit that I don't want, period, let alone pay for. Like, I don't even want it to be there. I don't care about all the sensors that have been mandated into cars. I don't care about all the safety features that have been mandated into cars that usually just increase the price, complexity, weight, all of that, while making a car number. It's probably exceedingly hard for a company like Toyota now to actually make a visceral driver's car that you can feel, because frankly, the governments of this world have just stepped way out of their lane. Like, people talk about my body, my choice, my car, my choice. You know, like, I get to choose how safe or dangerous my car is. As a human and American, that should be on my shoulders. You know, I don't even understand seatbelt laws. Fuck yes, I wear a seatbelt. Always have. But I don't understand why we should make somebody. It's, you know, their decision. But, you know, that's the problem, is where does that line, never, it's a goalpost that keeps getting pushed back. Somebody goes, hey, we need to put seatbelts in this and keep, you know, this is dangerous. And we go, well, yeah, that makes sense. But now we're at a point where it's like, we don't even need to drive because that's dangerous. And it's like, well, hold the fuck on. Like, where have we gone so astray to where these cars are $50,000 for just basic ass transportation?
A chauffeur, an e-chauffeur. Yeah. Like,
I mean, dude, it's, and that's the thing. Like, I understand that us as enthusiasts are a very small minority, but like, dude, just in general, transportation is becoming unaffordable. And I think the return to shitboxes, what we call shitboxes endearingly,
lovingly. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think we're starting to realize, damn, I mean, give me an argument. Hey, just the art of simplicity of the 90s. Like, you can have power, fun, and an economical car that's not that hard on consumables.
Or like we've been talking about, you can build a CRX that's got sub 200 horsepower and probably, like, put the biggest smile that you could put on your face.
Facts.
And it's scary. What's scary to me is, like, especially working in an industry like TPMS, which, if you don't know, like, every car is mandated with TPMS. It has to have TPMS sensors, right? And it's because of the Firestone recall. Like, they were flipping the Explorers. And the whole thing started, backtrack starts, when Ford was reducing tire pressure in the cars to their test rides, and it was a smooth ride. Meanwhile, they did that at the expense of safety, right? Which is bullshit. But the government and big corporations make money on chaos. Like, mm-hmm. the richest people in the world sell war. They sell medicine, right? And so it's like, I don't want to be conspiratorial about it, but, like, it feels like they've gone through every end road they can to make chaotic solutions, like solutions to chaos, right? Like, there's no rock and roll. Like, there's, like, these the things that are great about the 80s and 90s don't exist anymore. And it's like, how can they, you know, how can they turn it down all the way to where we become these drones, and then only wealthy people can afford to buy a car because they're all EVs and they're all 100 grand. And then it becomes a privilege of the wealthy. I mean, like you said it, like, I'll go in, like, there is no middle class. It doesn't exist, right? You can't make what our parents made and support a family. So it's scary. Right. It's scary to me. Like, what are we going to do? We're going to have, like, are they going to mandate that you can't drive a shitbox on the road? Like, we have to take them to a track? Like, depends is that the future of how it goes?
Depends on who we elect, and that's facts.
It'll make you think.
That's the thing. Inflation is a real thing, you know, and nobody's taken away from that or arguing that or anything. But, like, you guys, if you're, you know, whatever, I don't want to say younger, but if you haven't thought about this, like, the shit that we have forced into cars is making them unaffordable. And it's like you said, man, these companies thrive off of chaos. I'm not conspiracy to the point where I think that they caused the chaos necessarily, but I think they absolutely capitalize on it. I think right now, if you want to make a bunch of money, you create a sensor that, let's just say, monitors tire pressure, and you get that regulated into every new car through a government that's, you know, kind of reaching a little too far, and then you're rich. You've got your idea mandated in every car. Now, should it be in every car? No. You can get out of the car, get your fat ass out of a car, and check your tire pressure. That is a luxury. It is not a necessity in a car. And I think that people should be able to choose. Do I want that? Do I want that convenience? If so, all right, it's an extra $600. Stack it on. If not, strip it the fuck out. I don't want it. You know, like,
yeah.
And that's the problem, is that as enthusiasts, we're getting forced to buy stuff that we don't want in these new cars, and it's running the price up. As the average commuter, they're unaware of this shit. They don't pay attention. Yeah. But we're a little bit more in tune to that stuff.
Well, I think about, like, the average commuter, right? Like, I think about Joe's regular guy who just drives to work, drives home. What if he had the opportunity to spend $15,000 on a car he could go and get away from life for a minute and go and drive? And, like, what would that do? Like, how many more enthusiasts would there be if it was in a not such a barrier of entry? Like, it wasn't so damn impossible, or you have to look at something like a beat car and think, like, know the aftermarket enough to say, okay, I can make this that, and I can make this this, and I can make that that. Like, why can't he buy a $15,000 car off the lot that is just fun for him to go rip in? Like, why is it not a, it's not, we live in a world of anxiety and, like, you know, just all the things that we create via social media, right? We use it to our advantage a lot, and it causes a lot of that anxiety, right? How much of that is relieved by something such as having a little ripper to go take out and go bury around corners and probably do 60 at the most? Danger. It's not the government's job for you to eliminate your risk.
Right. You know? If there's not a sense of danger with my speed, I don't want it. You know, like that, and that's perfectly exemplified in EVs. You have all the speed, none of the fucking feel or danger. You know what I mean? And so it's just like,
maybe it
wasn't speed I was chasing all these years. Maybe there's more to it. You know, like it's all that kind of stuff. And you mentioned CRX, you know, and I have a CRX, and I have other cars. I have faster cars. I have nicer cars. I have cars with more internet clout, all that kind of stuff. And I'm telling you guys, there is nothing like a swapped Honda hatch. I don't care how much money you're trying to throw at that. You can spend, $300,000 on a GT3 RS, and it is a kick-ass car. It is better in every fucking quantifiable way.
No doubt.
I'm not saying the CRX is better in any way, but I am saying that the feeling, that visceral, raw feeling that a screaming, gutted out, lightweight Honda hatch gives you, you don't find in the GT3 RS. You don't find it in anything else. It is uniquely Honda brilliance, man. VTEC is just brilliant. And it came from such a place of automotive enthusiasm. You know, like I said, we use that term shitbox because it's just the internet term, but we say it endearingly. Like, there's nothing, that's what I mean, bang for the buck, man, to want to come back into something like that. Like, you just can't beat that. Or even to be a kid for a first car, you can't beat a Honda. All these kids now, man, the fascination, you know, when we were kids, man, you know, Honda hatchbacks were a freaking thing. And now it's kind of evolved from that. Now the youth is very infatuated with JDM. It can be a JDM piece of shit, But if that steering wheel is on the right hand side, they don't care. It can be an automatic. It can be a hunk of shit.
But that has a lot to do with internet clout, like you said.
Right.
So it's almost like the same thing. It's like the same cycle.
Well, and there's always going to be trendsetters. So like, yeah, but what I'm saying is like, if you're a young person and you're getting into this, a Honda you can buy it for $2,000 and you can take it to the moon, man. Like it will grow with you. You know, it's simple to work on. It's just checks all the right boxes. I think if you're coming back into cars, it's a little bit harder, right? Like I you're different, but I think a lot of people that are 40 years old are like, man, I can't have a Honda. My thing is like, why not? Like, stop thinking.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because my first car was an 81 Scirocco.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I was a Volkswagen fanboy, but I was never a part of the Volkswagen scene as a young kid. I had a couple friends into Volkswagens. I had several Volkswagens. So when I initially said, like, I want back into this whole, like, fucking with cars game, like, I can't get away from, like, watching it and consuming stuff. And, like, what do I want a wagon. I want this. I wanted bags. I wanted everything. And then I'm like, fuck, dude, this car is boring as shit. Like, it's just, it's pretty, but it's boring. So I'm like, well, what else, right? What's the next move? The next move, I get a CJ Jeep. I got a shitbox Jeep. Like, of course, right? I put my own thing on it. I did my own stuff. And we wheeled the shit out of it. And it's like, you just, I'm a guy that I want to try everything once. And I assume you're the same type of dude, right? You're into Jeeps. You're into a bunch of different stuff. And to me, it's don't let someone else, like, what is it? The Franklin Delano Roosevelt comparison is the root of all unhappiness.
Yeah.
Don't think so, especially the kid, you're watching this and you're into cars and S3 is the thing, right? You're watching, you're listening. Here I'm telling you now, follow your own path. What you want.
And if you're 42, man, you're looking at the world through a filter of being 42 and what is appropriate, what's age appropriate. Like, fuck that. We know you wanna. like, don't worry about that shit, man. Just do what you want to do, you know?
Well, I'm living proof of that, and don't waste. I mean, look, I don't think it's a waste because I walked that path, right? And it was, you know, it was cool while I had it for a little while. But it was shallow, and it was shallow because of IG clout and, like, you know, what people are saying, what trends are. Fuck trends. Fuck what people are saying. Like, do what the fuck. Like, I would be more happy with a manual gearbox and a shift knob and a fucking steering wheel because that's where my hands go and pedals and, like, the fucking visceral experience. Like, I'd be more happy.
You gotta follow your own true north, and I think that's what social media has done to everybody, especially the younger, our generation realizes it's fucked us. The young generation, it's all they know. But you got to make sure that you're doing what's making you happy. You know what I mean? I think a lot of the youth side of car culture these days is doing what they see other youth car culture do on Instagram and trying to keep up. And it's all focused around ride height and wheel fitment and you know, boutique-y wheels. And I'm like, you know, that's cool. Nothing against it. But if you lack the perspective of, like, what real driving's all about, like, why do you, you know, it's like there's a whole thing out there that you have not experienced yet. And you ain't going to find it on Instagram because it doesn't translate to Instagram. It's a real thing. It's a personal thing. It's you kind of touched on it. When you can get in that car and just rip up the street and it's like immediate therapy. I think that being a guy, girl, anybody, like, you have to follow your happiness, man. That is one thing that I've always been good at is, like, I play. I make time to play. Cars, I mean, I live with cars that the average person could not live with. And I pile bikes into CRXs and I go ride at the trails. But, like, it keeps you. Right? Like when you're driving that car, it's not even like real complete sentences, but you get like a feeling of like, this is it.
Authenticity.
I'm doing the right thing. I am who I want to be. I am in this moment. I am content. I am happy. I am sad. Same thing on a mountain bike for me. I could be sweating, miserable, just miserable out there, but there's still a sense of you that's like, fuck yes, because I'm not doing the easy fucking convenient thing. You know what I mean? I'm not taking the path of least resistance in everything in my life. You know, like it's gives you value to stand for something. And I think that humans need to do that, dude. And not to get like overly whatever poetic, but like it's the society that we're living in, dude. Like back in the day, it was different. You know, in the tribal days, it was different. You went out there and you hunted and you chased it down or you did whatever, you know what I mean? But like these days, we're stuck. Adults are stuck. And kids, you know, if you're in your mid-20s, you're on that verge. Which way are you going to go? You're either going to get stuck or right now you're going to say, no, I'm not fucking going that way. And the beauty of being a kid is like you can make that choice. You start making the wrong choices and then your life's dictated for you. You know what I mean? There's a sweet spot.
The scary thing is like the wrong choice can feel so right because of what everyone around you tells you, and you lose the authenticity of what you're trying to do with yourself. Like you're given one shot, you're one in the chamber, like let's go. And are you going to lay in your deathbed regardless if you're authentic and you live life by the seat of the pants and go, man, I should have done different? Probably. But you probably lay there and you go, damn, I had a lot of fun. Like, yeah, I had some good fucking times. Like,
there's that well-known thing where they wrote a book, these nurses that worked in hospice, and they started asking people, this is like well-documented, I'm probably butchering it, but they started asking people on their deathbed, like, they're in hospice, they're not coming back, they're old, they've lived their life, like, what are your regrets? And it was always like, I wish I had loved more, you know, and told the people around me, and like really spent time with the people around me. The other thing is, I wish I had not cared what people thought, you know, because at the end of your rope, we cannot see it now in the middle, but at the end of your rope, you're like, why the fuck did I live a life where I conform to what the people around me wanted me to be? Like, don't do that shit.
And I feel privileged and I feel very lucky because it was a turning point with Jeep Beach for me. Like we all went down to Jeep Beach and I mean, some of the best times I remember having in the past decade, probably. We had such a great time. And it clicked for me where it was like, all right, like you have a chance to do it. And I kind of had that self-realization, maybe not on my deathbed, like while I could still walk around and do a few things. And it was like, yeah, dude, like I can say right now, I'm a happier person with less bells and whistles, right? With just the possibility of growing into the things that are really, really a good fucking time. And being around people, like being around the people I vibe with, you know, like we talked about earlier, like the people in the car scene, like the real people, not the clout chasers. The real people. It's just you don't find that as a car enthusiast anywhere else. So get out and see some shit. I mean, I would say that
too. Yeah. I came to the realization like life hit me hard in my later 20s. A lot of that was reggae influenced, and the reggae came from going to Hawaii a lot. And the Hawaii became a spiritual thing. It's hard to explain on a podcast without sounding like an idiot. But if you go to Hawaii and you stand on the North Shore on some trail mountaintop looking at the ocean, it's hard not to see God, you know, and like all that stuff starts to become very clear. And then I found reggae through Hawaii, and then reggae, man, like, look, it's lyrically potent music in a world where a lot of music is complete fucking trash with a catchy beat. And you start listening to those lyrics and stuff and it started hitting me in it. And this was in my late 20s, and it made me realize what's important. And just as an example, I realized that I would rather drive a shitbox CRX with VTEC to the mountain bike park to go ride my bike for 2 hours in the middle of the week than drive a PDK Porsche 911 with two pedals in traffic, you know, going back and forth to my job. It's not. The value's not there for me. And car culture is materialistic. It is. And I struggled with that when that was in my late 20s. I was like, the fuck am I doing? Like, this whole magazine is about materialistic shit, but it's not. You just got to cross over into that next level. And yes, your social media car culture is very materialistic. Automotive media right now is fucked because it's materialistic. We're not, in a lot of cases, listening to the right people. You know why? Because the right people take a long time to say something, like we're saying right now, for example, or like an article that's been labored over and written. What doesn't take a long time is to make a 20-second video for TikTok on some fucking dope boy wheels. Like, I don't give a shit about your wheels. I don't give a shit about your car. I hope you like it. I like mine, and I love car culture. I like the discipline it gives you, the sense of reward it gives you, the fact that you're, like, working on it, and you're thinking, and, you know, average people, dude, they don't live their life like that. Like, they're content to be lazy. I'm not. I cannot sit at home and be like, let me just flip on the TV. It's like, nah, let's go poke at this car until it breaks and then fix it. You know, like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go take the sunroof out and throw it in the trash because it's a nice thing. Like, I'm always just, my mind's going with this kind of stuff. And it infiltrates everything I do, whether it's bikes or jet skis, old jet skis or cars or, you know, just in general, it affects everything. So I don't know, man. Like I said, for me, I realized that I'd rather be in a TJ Jeep or something, some good guy 4x4. I'd rather be in some angry 80s or 90s little sports car that you can really feel, over trying to get the best and the newest or whatever. You guys need to make your own decisions, but realize that social media can be a devil that's pulling you in a certain direction that's not going to ultimately lead you to happiness.
By the way, like, it's not like you stop there either, right? You're into stand-ups. Like, there's a very niche. There is a strong following for that. Like, I have friends that are into stand-ups, right? And, like,
stand-up jet skis for you guys that don't know.
Yeah, I've yet to stand up on a jet ski, but I can only imagine that, like, when that day comes, I'm quite sure that I get the vibes you get from that, right?
That's my mentality, and I hope you guys share it, is that I would rather work on that stand-up jet ski and try and learn it and try and get up and then be like, all right, how do we turn? Okay, how do we turn? Let me master this. When you go out and you ride a stand-up jet ski, you're not just riding. You are always learning and progressing. But most of America, you know why the stand-up jet skis died? Because they made a sit-down, and it was easier. And you didn't have to learn how to ride it. You could just put your ass on it and hit the gas, and it went. And most of human population goes, yeah, I'll take that. And I'm like, but you're missing the whole journey, the whole attraction. And it's the same thing with cars, shit boxes versus new cars. You're missing it. And they're like, well, you know, the internet, blah, 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 this is faster. And technically automatics are faster than manuals and blah. And it's like, you're fucking missing it. That is a statement made by a guy that can't drive a stick. Like, because if you can, you're going to understand the attraction to that experience because it's more than speed. If you want to strap into something fast and go, get on an airplane. They're fast. You know, like it's a sports car for a reason, because it is a sport, because it is more than just getting from point A to point B. It's a beautiful thing. Like, humans made cars, and that's kind of an appliance and a necessity. But then other humans came in and said, whoa, 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 we can make this so much cooler. Like, the fact that just the current state of the world is just doesn't see the value in that bothers me. It points to just a mindset of the world that I don't vibe with.
Well, I mean, like, and I feel passionate, so passionate, that people that don't understand, it's a mission, instead of just being like, fuck you, man, save the manuals, fuck your automatic, fuck all this shit, right? I can say, like, why? Like, I want to have a conversation with that guy. And if he's just an Instagram clout chaser, whatever, fine, go on your way. Go operate two pedals and have yourself a wonderful day. But, like, I feel like they don't get it because they haven't sought it out, right? Because it's not available. It's not a thing anymore. Like, it's starting to become not a thing, right? And so it's like, I almost feel like, as old Frank, like, now is the time when I can say, young kid, like, my niece that literally just got a learner's permit today. I said, when do you want to learn how to drive a manual? And I was like, come right now, drive the TJ. You can let the clutch out and it rolls. It's the perfect thing to teach yourself on.
Yeah,
it's
like, see, I like to be able to manipulate my car like that. You know what I mean? Like it's, and people, I don't know if they don't realize it's a learnable skill, y'all. You can all learn it. For some reason, these people want to die on the hill of automatics are better. And it's like, you can learn to drive it. You don't have to buy an automatic Z, you pussy. You could buy a stick shift and learn it. Use your Google and your computer that you like so much to fucking watch a YouTube video to learn how to drive stick, but they don't. They would rather just defend their kind of pathetic point of view. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why you hear them, like you hear someone that says like, oh, you know, it's faster. The twin clutch, oh, it's the same as driving a manual. Bullshit.
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 Now, there are people out there, you know, people out there that like the engineering feat of like a twin clutch. You know, there's people out there that want to race and go fast and they care about the time and the number. All right, fine. I get that. You know, I get that when you get to a certain level of horsepower, which these cars are reaching now, you know, it's something like a twin clutch does fit with that. But I mean, from my point of view, I don't mess with cars to be the fastest guy. I mess with cars because I fucking love the feeling of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so for me, I don't understand. Like, I'm on a Z page on Facebook and, you know, these people are buying Zs because in automatics because they didn't want to wait. And I'm like, you realize if a Z is worth $50,000, and they're trying to get a $20,000 markup. An automatic Z to me is worth fucking $10,000 brand new. Like, there is no value to that car whatsoever. I just don't. I'm like, you're taking everything that the Z was created to be, and you're fucking cutting its balls off. You're still getting an expensive car that's going to depreciate hard. You're getting a car with no real convenience or usable space, and you don't get the driving experience that it was created for. It doesn't make sense.
It's funny you bring up the Z, too, because, like, I feel like it's almost DNA at this point because my dad growing up in South Florida was one of the first 240Z owners like on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And him and my uncle built Z cars back in the day. Like they were friends with a guy named Tom Horan that was local in Atlanta that raced SCCA. He was a factory Nissan driver. He showed me a Fairlady Z when I was 9 years old. It blew my head, blew my brain apart. Right. I was like, wait, drive on the right side. And, but they bought them because he would have told you if he was sitting right here, we wanted to, no offense here, but we wanted to beat up all the rich kids with the Porsches.
Yeah. And that's what the Z was.
Yeah.
You know, the Z was gunning for the 911.
Right.
It's kind of what it was. I don't know. I mean, to try and wrap this up so we don't just go and keep it short. Is there anything that you want to say? Obviously, you've been pulled back into the shitbox lifestyle.
Yeah.
This is all part of it. You start to reach this age or this point. It's not even age-based. It's just kind of a perspective-based point in your life where you're like, man, I miss it. I want to get back to that. I don't care what the fucking world thinks about it. I want cars to be a hobby, not a flex, you know?
Yeah, I've chased that dream, that flex dream. I've been there, you know, and recently, and this is shallow. I do want to say, like, anyone that's watching this with a clean CRX that they want to get rid of, that's your boy. but chase what's important to you, what you enjoy about something. Whether it's making bracelets or, you know, building a car or whatever, right? We're talking about building a car because that's what we're both into. But chase what you want. Like, be authentic. Be an authentic person. And I can tell you from experience, like, likes mean shit. Likes are shallow. It's an instant dopamine, and it's stupid. Like,
well, yeah,
it makes zero sense.
In today's world, it's harder. It's harder for people to realize, what am I doing for me? Like, how much of what I'm doing right now is an outside influence? It's hard to figure that out. It's not obvious. So that's a whole separate step to figure out what really makes you happy.
Well, like, I mean, we talked, is it,
is it the like that's making you happy, or is it what you do? You know, like with my stand-up jet skis, with my E34 BMW, I purposely did not join Facebook pages. With the jet ski, I did, because it's a small group of people, and they're like, oh, you need to be on this page and this page and this page. I was like, okay, yeah. But then every other post starts to be like jet ski, and not just jet ski, but like jet ski opinions and all this stuff that's seeping into your head. And after a couple of weeks, I was like, no, fuck all this stuff, man, because I want to experience it organically and naturally. I don't, like, we live in a world where you get so overexposed so fast. People do not realize how much it steals from the journey of it. Like, learning is the fun part. Going out there and wrenching on a car and experiencing the results without the internet telling you beforehand, like, that's the fun part of it. Magazines were an amazing gift because you read and you got inspired and you got this fire inside of you to go out there and do something, but you didn't have comments telling you why you shouldn't do it or what a better option would be. Like, you got to break free from that shit. You just got to start doing what is going to tickle your pickle. What's going to tickle your pickle?
Well, someone told me one time, I heard this, and it stands true, and it's one of those things that replays in my head, is if you don't enjoy the process, you'll never appreciate the payoff.
Yeah.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy the story. You know, all of my old cars, they come with stories. You know, every time I get gas in the CRX or the 944 or even the old F-150, I got, like, people come up and they're like, oh, man, I used to have one. What did you do here? And I can be like, I'll tell you, because I did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you buy a new car. Let's say you buy a new Supra and you get it tuned. You're like, well, see, what I did was I spent too much on a new sports car that doesn't have T-tops. And then I had somebody tune it, and they just plugged in the computer and went boop, beep, bop, boop, and now I have power. Cool, huh?
That's cool. You know? Isn't that awesome? Yeah, that's so true.
I mean, I guess that's cool. And that's the thing, is that car culture has gone past that sweet spot, past that love affair, and it's gone so far into technology that it's lost the attraction for me and for a lot of people. Like, don't get me wrong, I think a lot of people out there will go, hell yeah, that Supra's cool. But it doesn't have that thing where it grabs you in like a sports car of the 80s or 90s did, where you go, I don't care. I don't care if it doesn't make sense. I don't care if it's overpriced. I don't care if I can't put my kid in it. They'll figure it out. Like, I got to have it, because it's just speaking to my soul. Like, you know, numbers don't speak to. I wrote an article about this last week, and I guess we can close with this. But, like, computers, algorithms have to think in ones and zeros. We are above that. Believe it or not, guys, we're above computers. We think on a whole different level with the spirit and a soul and senses and smell and sight and touch and heartbeats and all this stuff. Computer can't fucking replicate that. So don't live in their world. Live in yours, because it's better.
Yep. I go smell BMW crayons in an old BMW. Like, there's things you can never, like, you know, like, anyone you get in that's past a certain age point, like, it smells a certain way, and it's the exact thing, unless it's Kiki's that worked at, you know, the club down the street. And it might smell like coconut oil.
All right, well, unless you got anything else, I'm going to close this out.
Ah, man, thanks for bringing me on. I appreciate it, and I hope to do more of this. Hopefully we'll have topics, and yeah, if you like what you see, obviously, you should download the app, because I think we're going to have more of this to come. So,
yeah, man. Yeah, download the app. It's fucking free. It's on Apple and it's on Android. Even though we hate technology, we're playing that game to bring you this content in the manner that you want to get it. And then, yeah, I guess that's it. Also, you know, follow us on all the socials if you don't already. But I guess you probably do if you're listening to this. But, you know, TikTok, it's S3 Magazine. It's S3 Magazine on everything. Just go check it out. But get that app. That helps us out.
Yeah, and it'll tell you when this type of thing and all these formats is up. You can go check it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we're trying to do here, like, in the print, and I'm just being honest at this point, in the print world, we had our own audience, right? Like, people subscribed to it, and we could reach them. And that was a great thing. It's a powerful thing. And in the world of YouTube, like, your audience is on their platform. Yeah. A lot of people accept that. I think it's bullshit. So, I mean, look, you're one one fucking administration change from car culture being gun culture on YouTube, and then it's over. And then, you know, you're not going to be able to reach, car people are not going to be able to reach like-minded people, and vice versa. People that want to learn are not going to be able to reach them. So we're trying to get people on this app so that at the end of the day, we have a way to communicate, even if they don't want us to, right? Like, we think that car culture needs to be by car culture. I hate the fact that car culture is given to us by Facebook, by Meta, and by Google these days. Fuck that, 100%. Man. They have killed the industry. The power of the car culture needs to stay in this car culture. The ad dollars don't need to go to Facebook, and they don't need to go to Google, because guess what? Those guys want you riding in little pods that pick you up on your fucking doorstep to take you to the damn internment camps or wherever the hell they want to take us in the future. Like, it's horseshit. The power of an industry comes from keeping the interest within that industry. So that's my pitch. That got out of hand.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's cool because, you know, I'm a guy who misses flipping through a magazine. And looking through what you've done with the app, quite frankly, it's the magazine. Like,
it's the same shit.
It is. It's the magazine.
Minus the killer art design, which is a pet peeve of mine because we were the best at it, man. It was awesome. But I can't force it on the world. The world chose the convenience of the phone versus, you know, the magazine. So that's what it is for now. Anyway, thanks for listening this far, guys, if you did. And Frankie Corndog's there. All right, we'll see. We'll see you guys.